All right, back on the Young Turks. I have no new tweets. I'm moving on. My table's gone. Okay, it's going over here. Casper's here. Everybody's going to Vegas on Wednesday. They're going to see John Ederle. They're going to see Emma Vigeland. They're going to see legendary cameraman Ty Bayless, who was arrested in St. Louis with Jordan. He's out. Mm-hmm. He's going to Vegas. You guys going to watch the DNC Unity Reform Commission and see if they actually do any reform. And if you're not in Vegas, if you are in Vegas, go at 12:30 to Bally's, where you will get to watch the whole thing. Mm-hmm. If you're not, YouTube.com/TYT. We'll be double streaming tomorrow. So at 4 o'clock Eastern, we will start the Unity Reform Commission stream on YouTube.com/TYT. Mm-hmm. And of course, at 6 o'clock, we'll be doing the show. And we at that point, we'll be showing both on our channel. And this means, Edwin, can you please move the monitor if you're watching at home? Okay. All right, Casper, what do you got for us?
All right. We have a very serious rundown ahead for you guys. But before we get to the serious stuff, I want to have a little bit of fun and give you an update on a story we did earlier. Earlier this year, Lawrence O'Donnell was unfortunately humiliated after someone working for NBC leaked some footage of him losing his patience with some of his producers during a live broadcast. Now, NBC has identified the leaker, and that individual has been fired. So what we know so far is the video of Lawrence O'Donnell was leaked on September 20th. The leaker was identified, confronted, and fired on September 26th. So 6 days later, they found him. It turned out to be a Today Show editor who said he did it because he thought it was funny, and it was. But it wasn't exactly the perfect crime because he did leave a very clear trail. So he was easy to find, easy to fire. It's unfortunate. They didn't identify who the person is. And I'm actually happy they didn't do that because, you know, at least he'll be maybe okay with finding other work. But I want to go to other Lawrence O'Donnell videos because they're hilarious.
Okay, I have commentary on this in a second as to whether they should have fired him or not. But first, let's needlessly show you the video again.
Okay, no, but there's like a ton of video possibilities here. So let's show you one of the longer ones that kind of touches on all of the different moments where he lost his patience. Go.
I don't know why I bother to say how to cut the slots when you don't do it. So now I have to chase those stupid goddamn entrails that you allowed him to stick out there. Jesus Christ, crazy fucking sound coming in my ear, this fucking stupid hammering. I told you why I wanted those fucking words cut. It just fucking sucks. It fucking sucks to be out here with this out of control shit. Any fucking thing can come into my ear at any moment. That's what I know. Anybody can get into my fucking ear at any time. Some woman talking about what we're doing after the show. Fucking guests' faces coming up in the middle of a fucking script.
Look, I'm sorry. It's funny every time.
It's funny because we've been there. I mean, not to say that we've like lost our temper to that extent, but we've had our bad days where things are going wrong and we're live on air and things are malfunctioning. And the thing that makes us different is that we don't do like this buttoned up news show where everything has to go perfectly and we can't just be honest with the audience about what's going on. He does the robotic button down news show. He's a great guy, he's a smart guy, but it's like if you screw up on live TV and you're doing traditional TV, it's like the end of the world, right?
Yeah. So look, we're not mad at him. I mean, he probably yelled at the producer too much there. Let's just keep it real, okay? but having said that, like you shouldn't say, like he was worried that they were saying the wrong things on air. Mm-hmm. You should be worried about that, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have an earpiece and somebody's talking at you while you're trying to talk on air, it is enormously distracting.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure that I've ever had all the people coming in my ear. Okay. But anyway, it's not to get on Lawrence, and you can't go leak tapes like this. Of course you can't. Of course you're going to get fired. Yeah, but you want to do more videos? All right.
Okay, let's just go random video, whatever.
Random videos, go.
What's going on? Why am I losing this? Why don't I have sound? All right, it's back. Someone's pressing buttons and turning my sound off. Who's asking for a Labor Day rundown in my ear?
that moment of anger. It's awesome.
It's so good.
We're not mad at you, brother. In fact, it's the most human thing.
I'm going to be honest. It made me like him more because it made me see his human side. You don't see television people's human side, right?
I know.
Anyway, another one. Just real quick. One more. Maybe two more.
God damn it.
10 seconds.
Get.
5, 4.
Sorry, man. Sorry, but that's just too good. Okay. Now, look. The guy shouldn't have been fired. You can't leak tapes of the host.
Okay, I know.
I know, but let him go. Let him go. No, I'm kidding. They did let him go. They literally let him go. And hey, knucklehead, if you take tape from one end of the company and drag it over to your email or whatever and then edit it on your computers, are they going to catch you? Of course they're going to catch you.
Come on. You got to know better than that. Let's just end with one more.
Just one more.
And tragedy, and into that tragedy today stepped the President of the United States. There's insanity in the control room tonight.
It's the best.
Once in a while, we still say there's insanity in the control room tonight.
Mm-hmm. There's insanity in the control room tonight.
All right. Anyway. Okay, it was a mistake, but it turned out to be an amusing mistake.
Absolutely. Okay. All right, now we move on to the serious stuff. The opioid epidemic continues to ravage huge parts of the country, and the question still remains, how is it that the drug industry was able to sell so many of these pills in an unmitigated fashion? Well, a new investigative report, an incredible investigative report done by 60 Minutes and the Washington Post, shows a theme that is all too common in American politics. Corruption, the revolving door of politics, lobbying, and a profit motive that led individuals to support the sale of these drugs, the unmitigated sale of these drugs, over for profit, over the lives of all of these individuals who have died. Now, this story is crazy because it talks about how lawmakers in Congress unanimously supported legislation that would strip the DEA of its ability to suspend questionable and suspicious narcotic sales. And the way that they did that is they received a ton of money from these pharmaceutical industries and from distributors, so they could strip the DEA of any power that it had to regulate and to enforce laws to prevent the overuse and the overdistribution of opioids. So according to the piece, the industry worked behind the scenes with lobbyists and key members of Congress, pouring more than $1 million into their election campaigns. So what happened? What was the new legislation and what did it do to strip the DEA of its power? The new law makes it virtually impossible for the DEA to freeze suspicious narcotic shipments from the companies that powerful tool had allowed the agency to immediately prevent drugs from reaching the street. So essentially, in the beginning, if the DEA saw that there were drug distributors, you know, distributing a ton of opioid pills to a specific pharmacy, they would immediately freeze that type of transaction in order to investigate to make sure that there wasn't anything illegal or dangerous going on. Well, Congress passed legislation that changed the burden of proof necessary for the DEA to be able to do that. So think about it as the difference of a preponderance of evidence to beyond a reasonable doubt. There's a difference when it comes to burden of proof there. And they made it so difficult that it was virtually impossible for the DEA to step in and freeze or suspend these drug sales.
So just two things there already. Well, one is that the only reason you do that is because you want to make sure that those drugs keep on flowing. Now, the drug companies have a profit motive here. They want to sell more drugs. So what do? Well, they do what is logical. They go and buy off American politicians so that they could change the rules to allow them to do that at a greater rate. Mm-hmm. So the drug companies are the number one contributors to politicians in America, more than the oil companies, more than the banks, and they are the biggest practitioners of crony capitalism. So this story is amazing, but they also do it in other ways. They've extended their monopoly from 5 years to 12 years on some of these drugs. They don't allow you, us, the United States government, to negotiate for lower drug prices for Medicare. That is insane. So that $1 million they invest winds up getting great return on investment. But the degree to which our politicians are crooked is unfortunately indescribable, because you know the results of here. It's not like anybody voting on that bill didn't know what was going to happen. You were going to have a bigger flow of drugs and it was going to affect more people. It was going to lead to more addiction. But they're like, yes, but they didn't pay me. These guys paid me. Private financing of elections leads to politicians working for private interests. In this case, the drug companies. We shouldn't be surprised when they sell us out on their behalf.
Exactly. And I want to be clear about something. This was not legislation that Congress unanimously passed several years ago. This was legislation that Congress unanimously passed in April of 2016. So this was recent, and news of the opioid epidemic was already making headlines. People already knew about what was going on. Lives were already being destroyed because of the over-distribution and over-prescription of these types of drugs. Now, a judge who is essentially talking about this and is writing about this for a law review journal said the following: at a time when, by all accounts, opioid abuse, addiction, and deaths were increasingly markedly the new law imposed. The new law imposed a dramatic diminution of the agency's authority. He also says it is now all but logically impossible for the DEA to suspend a drug company's operations for failing to comply with federal law. So to give you a little more information about what this new legislation does, what this new law does, since it's not legislation anymore, they again unanimously passed it. Previously, the DEA could freeze drug shipments that posed an imminent danger to the community, giving the agency broad authority. Now, though, the DEA must demonstrate that a company's actions represent a substantial likelihood of an immediate threat, which is a much higher bar. Now, the reason why we know about this is because there has been a whistleblower who used to work for the DEA. His name is Joe Ranaziski, and he used to run the DEA's Office of Diversion Control. And so he focused primarily on pharmaceutical drugs and pharmaceutical drug abuse, and he saw what was going on. He fought pretty aggressively to stop this type of legislation, and unfortunately, he was unsuccessful. So now he's speaking up about it. Yeah.
There is no situation where if our representatives actually represented us, they would say, you know what, we just randomly think drug companies should be able to set any price they like and that we shouldn't be able to negotiate on behalf of Americans. That is not a situation that exists in the world. The only reason you do that is because you're owned by them. And by the way, that happened under Bush, but it also happened under Obama. And this is during the Obama years. And both parties often play along with them. So here they are. Here's a situation where the only reason you would set a higher bar for in this case is to make sure the drugs keep on flowing and the drug companies keep making more money, even though you know the addiction is out of control in the country. Yet both parties go, well, where's my bread buttered? Not by the public. We don't have public financing. We have private financing. These guys give me a lot of money. I'm going to do what they ask. If it leads you to have a family member who's addicted to drugs, I don't care. I already got my money.
So I want to call out a few of the politicians that were behind this legislation, those who sponsored it and those who ended up supporting it pretty aggressively. So in the very beginning was Representative Tom Marino, and I want to go to him. According to this investigative report, the chief advocate of the law that lobbied the DEA was Representative Tom Marino, a Pennsylvania Republican, who is now President Trump's nominee to become the nation's next drug czar. So a breaking news story today was that Trump claimed that starting next week, he will claim that there is a state of emergency due to the opioid epidemic. Well, you are now naming the same individual who pressured Congress to pass this type of legislation to be the drug czar. You think he's going to look out for the best interests of Americans that are battling with this type of addiction? No, he cares about making money. He cares about looking out for the drug industry that's padding his pockets. It's just corruption 101.
So in the past, drug czar meant you were going to fight drugs. In this case, drug czar might mean that he's the one that helps the American drug cartels push more drugs to get us more addicted and leads to heroin overdose, OxyContin overdose, and the list goes on. He is patient zero for the legislative problems that led to the addiction in the first place. Trump didn't pick him by accident. Trump will take anyone who has sold out to corporate interests and put him into the top position.
But I thought he was draining the swamp. What happened? Right.
It's gross how brazen they are about it. Because if you wanted to cover it up and you wanted to be sophisticated, you wouldn't pick Marino. You'd pick one of his lackeys. You'd pick a lower level guy who. No, he picked the guy who did the crime in the first place, not despite the fact that he helped push the drug addiction, but because of that fact. One more thing about Trump and his promises. He said that it's outrageous that under Obama we don't negotiate drug prices. He came in and immediately said that Trump will not negotiate drug prices, of course.
Yeah. By the way, when it comes to this law that passed stripping the DEA of its power to protect Americans, Obama signed that legislation into law. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And what I found interesting was that the Washington Post made it seem as though, oh, well, you know, Obama didn't really understand or realize the he was the president of the United States. You're going to sign something, you're going to sign your name and allow legislation to pass into law, you better know what's in it. And
some of the establishment press does an effective job of criticizing Trump. Even though he's part of the elite, et cetera, they consider him not part of the establishment. But man, they love to cover for Obama. And here it's ironic because they've done a wonderful report, a great job of investigating this. But you can't help but soft pedal Obama. What kind of an excuse is he didn't know what was in it? Then he should have found out and he should have done his homework. So no excuse for the Democrats, no excuse for Obama. They always make it seem like, oh shucks, Obama didn't. And no, Obama also got private financing. Obama got his entire cabinet handed to him by a Citigroup executive back in 2008. He took every person on the list but one. His entire cabinet was handed to him by Citigroup. Because his number one set of donors back in 2008 were the banks. You know, all the establishment wants to do is go back to the pre-Trump days. The pre-Trump days were terrible. We had Democrats and Republicans selling us out day in, day out. It was so bad, people were so frustrated, they voted for Trump. That's right. How bad the pre-Trump days were.
Right, well, for the establishment, that was the status quo. And they would love to go back to the status quo. Now, let's talk about homegirl Marsha Blackburn, because I really want to call her out. Now, when it comes to lobbying, there were specific people who received a lot of money from the drug industry. So political action committees representing the industry contributed at least $1.5 million to 23 lawmakers who sponsored or co-sponsored four versions of the bill, including nearly $100,000 to Representative Marino and $177,000 to Hatch. Now, when it comes to Marsha Blackburn, who is a representative in Tennessee, she received $150,000. And you may know she is now running to fill Bob Corker's Senate seat in Tennessee. However, she made news last week when she ran a controversial ad that Twitter demonetized. Take a look.
I'm 100% pro-life. I fought Planned Parenthood and we stopped the sale of baby body parts, thank God.
Okay, first of all, go back and watch our video coverage of that because she's lying. Planned Parenthood never sold baby body parts, but that's beside the point. You're pro-life? You're pro-life. You repeatedly co-sponsored legislation that helped fuel the deaths of 200,000 Americans since 2011. You're pro-life? No, you're a fraud. You're a disgusting, corrupt fraud. That's what you are. And you're also a liar, by the way. So it's pathetic. This whole pro-life BS pandering to the religious base, and they buy it, they eat it up. She's not pro-life, she doesn't care about life. The only thing she cares about is that cold, hard cash. She loves the corruption.
Guys, think about how crazy our system is. They're allowed to give $150,000 to a lowly representative from Tennessee. What do you think she's gonna do? You think she's gonna take the $150,000 and vote against them? No, she's going to vote for them. Look, the first time somebody gets a donation, you might say, hey, that corporation, the drug companies are taking a gamble on someone like Marsha Blackburn. The second time they get the donation, that means that gamble paid off. Marsha Blackburn did exactly as she was told. They got a return on investment. That's why they bought her again. And that's what she is. And includes all the people in the story, including the senator that Anna mentioned there, the $177,000 to Orrin Hatch. Orrin Hatch has been deeply corrupt for decades. And all the TV and the rest of the media does oftentimes is cover for him. And that's all the honorable gentleman from Utah. That honorable gentleman has taken millions upon tens of millions of dollars in legalized bribes and has done everything that his private donors have asked him to do. That's who Orrin Hatch is.
And then finally, the third part of this issue is the revolving door of politics, because the same lawyers who worked with the DEA in order to go after the industry and make sure that justice was served if there were illegal narcotics distributions, those people would leave the DEA and then guess what? They would go represent the drug industry. In fact, the prime example in this investigative report was Lyndon Barber. He was the DEA's former associate chief counsel. And in 2011, he left the DEA to go represent the drug companies. And he is just one of many individuals who used to work at the DEA who then went to go work for the drug industry. And the reason why that's terrible is because, well, obviously there's an issue with them not actually being genuine in being part of the DEA. It's all, you know, it's all a show for money. But more importantly, they knew the tactics that the DEA used in order to help mitigate the sale and distribution of these drugs. And so they would go and essentially share the secrets of the DEA with the industry so they could effectively lobby for legislation that would help them out.
And unfortunately, again, the corruption is bipartisan. Howard Dean, not related to this story, but to give you a sense of it, used to criticize the healthcare industry. Then he became a lobbyist for the healthcare industry after he stopped being in the government. And all of a sudden, the progressive Howard Dean you knew, gone. Now he's doing symposiums on how the private healthcare industry is helping to save America. It's funny what somebody will do if they're paid to do it. You need public financing so they work for the public interest. If you allow for private financing, they will work for the private interests. And since the drug companies are the number one donors in America, we are not going to stop that opioid addiction. Everything that you see will be a lot of huffing and puffing, but behind the scenes, they will almost all agree, yeah, let's give the donors exactly what they wanted, even if it costs American lives.
Exactly. And I just want to leave with one stat that should blow your mind. West Virginia is one part of the country that's really struggling with the opioid epidemic. And you know, the article mentioned the fact that between 2007 and 2012, there was one distributor known as Miami Lucan that shipped 20 million doses of hydrocodone and oxycodone to pharmacies in West Virginia. Okay, 20 million between 2007 and 2012. But according to the piece, despite the rising death rate in West Virginia, the highest in the nation, pleas in 2013 to halt Miami Lucan's operations were ignored by the legal office at headquarters. And it was because they were pressured by Congress to leave these distributors alone, because these distributors were funding them.
These are literally drug pushers. And you want to talk about a gateway drug? It's not marijuana. It's these legalized drugs. And you don't send that amount of drugs to West Virginia and not know that West Virginia is one of the epicenters of this drug dealing that's going on, that's leading to the drug addictions, that's leading to all these deaths. They knew, the people at the company knew, the politicians knew, but they all wanted to make a buck off of you to get you addicted. And if you wind up suffering horrible consequences or even dying, they still made their money. Anybody who knew those shipments were going at that rate to West Virginia knew exactly what they were doing and didn't give a damn.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, updates on the Harvey Weinstein story and more.
All right, back on the Young Turks. Never gets old. Jess, it's just me, writes, Anna's on fleek today with her outfit. Super, super cute.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't know what on fleek is. I'm old.
It's what the cool kids say.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. Okay, Joseph S. says, stop the hammering. Jasmine Desi 16 said, these videos made my day.
They're so good. I love Lawrence O'Donnell for doing this.
Even though he didn't mean to.
Right.
Digital Shark writes in, O'Donnell comes off like a frustrated dad that is one snarky comment away from losing his shit. That apparently is also true. Control Left says, there's insanity in the control room tonight would make a good subject for TYT's next promo. TYT behind the scenes, think about it. Interesting. Lucy First says, there's insanity in the control room should go on the soundboard. Ask and ye shall receive.
There's insanity in the control room tonight.
Okay. I believe that played for you guys. Sandra Joseph says, wait, let me try the other one.
Someone in that control room is out of control.
All right. Sandra Joseph says, we build a wall to keep the Mexicans out because of drugs, but Congress passes a bill to turn a blind eye to Farm Incorporated. And such a great point. It might remind me of Donald Trump with his insane, you know, the throwing the 60 pounds of marijuana over the wall. Mm-hmm. Like, see, that's the great thing about the drug companies. They don't have to throw 60 pounds of drugs over the wall. They can ship millions of barrels of drugs into West Virginia,
yep,
and just get the bribed politicians to turn a blind eye to it.
They don't even have to put it in their calves, their cantaloupe calves.
Yes, that's right. They don't even need cantaloupe calves. Last one, Joseph says, once again, it all comes back to that one sweet issue, money and politics. Yes. Get it out. Wolf-pack.com/wedding, okay? So that's the campaign to get $100,000 for Wolfpack so they could go on to their next campaign, which is going to be phenomenal, to make sure that we get the money out. Wolf-pack.com/wedding, contribute today. All right, what's next, Anna?
And real quick, I just want to give some love to Grace Baldridge and Amir Nikui for Murder with Friends. If you guys ever checked it out on the pop culture channel that we have, Pop Trigger, you probably loved it. It's awesome. It's about, you know, the darker side of history, some of the big crime stories of the past, including Jeffrey Dahmer, to the trenches of World War I. You guys should definitely check it out. Anyway, there's a new season. So when you're not watching us, definitely check out Pop Trigger's channel. And if you're a member, you can actually catch it in the archives anytime you want. You can become a member by going to tytnetwork.com/join.
Somebody's getting murdered tonight.
All right, let's move on. The Hollywood Reporter had an interview with Bob Weinstein. This is the brother of Harvey Weinstein. And of course, the interview had everything to do with the sexual assault allegations toward Harvey Weinstein. And Harvey has since been fired from the company that he and his brother Bob founded together. And Bob claims up and down that he knew nothing about Harvey's predatory ways. He had no idea that he was, coercing or forcing women into sexual situations that they did not want to be involved in. And so I wanted to share some of his perspective and then we'll discuss. He told the Hollywood Reporter that members of the board, meaning the board behind the company that they founded, including myself, did not know the extent of my brother's actions. I know him on a personal level better than anyone. It's hard to describe how I feel that he took out the emptiness inside of him in so many sick and depraved ways. It's a sickness, but not a sickness that is excusable. It's a sickness that's inexcusable. And I, as a brother, understood and was aware as a family member that my brother needed help and that something was wrong. But he said, you know, I didn't know that he was doing this to women. I thought he was cheating on his wife. I thought that he was needlessly cruel and mean to some of the people that were around him. But never did I think he would be a sexual predator.
So TMZ reports that Harvey Weinstein believes that it was his brother Bob Weinstein that actually leaked the damaging info to the New York Times. If that's the case, that's high stakes poker. That's some drama. Bob Weinstein claims that he's only talked to Harvey 10 times about personal matters in the last 5 years. I find all of that a little bit hard to believe. I think that they obviously are at war, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. They're not getting along. I can't count now the number of times that Bob Weinstein is called Harvey Weinstein sick and depraved after this scandal broke. And of course, kicked him off the board, which is convenient for Bob, who's still on the board. But I think he might have overplayed his hand. Mm-hmm. And so here he is now trying to do damage control, going, well, college, yeah, I never knew about this stuff. But one of the things that they asked about and that he refused to answer in this interview is, well, you guys just did contract negotiations and renewed Harvey Weinstein's contract. And there's good evidence that at that point you had all these allegations that you knew about. So how could you say you don't know? And he's like, I'm not talking about that because that's in litigation and yada, yada.
He wouldn't get into those specifics.
And you just heard the quote where he said he knows his brother best. You know your brother best, and you had no idea for decades and decades that it wasn't just cheating, but that there was the whole system set up with the executives and assistants bringing the women in to a place where they would be alone with Harvey, and Harvey would do this, and he did it all those times. And you're at the same company and never heard about any of that.
I mean, what we hear over and over again was that Harvey's behavior was an open secret, that everyone knew about it, but no one was willing to do anything about it. And now you kind of go back in time and you see interviews that women had done and some of the accusations that they had very publicly made. And it's interesting to see that nothing really caught on. You know, Courtney Love had an interview back in the early 2000s where she was asked, what kind of advice would you give to young women in the entertainment industry who want to break into the entertainment industry? And she, I'm paraphrasing, essentially said, if Harvey Weinstein invites you to a party, don't go. And you know, it seemed as though something like that didn't even raise red flags in the media or among you know, people in the entertainment industry. It didn't convince them to do something about it. And again, I think it goes back to the fact that he was a man in a position of power who would push for these projects and push for these movies and help people make that money. And at the end of the day, that was more important than the lives of all these women who are being abused. Now, whether or not Bob Weinstein knew about it or not, I mean, you can only speculate, and I hate speculating, but it seems weird to me. Now, let me give you some more of his quotes. When Harvey Weinstein released his initial statement in regard to these allegations, he took ownership of some of those allegations. But he also did this weird thing where in the end of his statement, he said that he was going to focus his energy on fighting the NRA. Everyone thought that was weird, including Bob Weinstein. He said, when I heard his written lame excuse, not an excuse, when I heard his admission of feeling remorse for the victims and then him cavalierly, almost crazily saying he was going to go out and take on the NRA, it was so disturbing to me. It was utter insanity. My daughters all felt sick hearing this because we understood he felt nothing. He also said, for me, I thought it was literally just going out there cheating, and he was just going out there cheating in a pervasive way. It wasn't like he even had a mistress. It was one after another, and that I was aware of. But as far as being in a room and hearing the description in the New York Times, no way, no effing way, was I aware that this type of predator, this was the type of predator that he was, and the way he convinced people to do things, I thought they were all consensual situations.
So let's break that down. I don't think Bob's doing himself any good by doing this interview. So first of all, if you didn't know that he masturbated into a potted plant while he had this one woman cornered in a restaurant somewhere, okay, you know, I understand that. It was a particularly bizarre thing, and they were the only two people in the room, and that story had not gotten out, okay? If you didn't turn him into his wife because of the cheating, you don't want to be overly judgmental. That's not your business. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But you, but decades and decades of these accusations and rumors, etc. And you're not someone else in the industry. You run the Weinstein Company with Harvey Weinstein.
Who's your brother?
Who's your brother? And you thought they were all consensual situations. So you thought, oh my God, there are dozens of women in Hollywood year after year who come in and will sleep for with my brother to get roles. And you thought that was awesome. Like you never questioned, hey, maybe we shouldn't hire those people. Maybe we should find the most talented actress
right,
instead of the one willing to sleep with Harvey Weinstein. Even in your scenario, I'm not speculating. I'm just saying based on what you said, that's not that great. Big guy.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point. And I didn't think of it from your perspective. But I think the thought process of people in these types of positions of power is that, yeah, of course it's consensual. Because here's a guy in a position of power and this is what women do, right? women will sleep with whoever they need to sleep with in order to have the opportunities that they need. That's it.
And we don't have to give the job to the most qualified person. We just have to give the job to the person who's willing to sleep with Harvey Weinstein. That is not a good defense. So I don't think Bob Weinstein did himself any favors with this. And if it turns out that Harvey is right, that Bob was the person who actually leaked in the first place, and we don't know if that's true, boy, he lit a match that he can't unlight. And now the whole house is on fire.
Yep. All right, well, from one sexual predator to another, let's move on to Donald Trump. A woman who accused Donald Trump of sexual assault is now sending a subpoena to the Trump administration in order to obtain any and all documents that the White House has in regard to allegations of sexual assault made against Donald Trump. Now, Summer Zervos is the name of the woman who is fighting to get those documents. She wants to sue Donald Trump for defamation because she believes after she came forward with her allegations, he went out of his way to defame her and discredit her. Now, keep in mind that the president cannot face any lawsuits while he is in office. However, I like that she's doing this because she is bringing up something that I think a lot of people have forgotten. The number of allegations against him, including allegations from his own ex-wife, by the way. So according to reports, Summer Zervos, a former contestant on The Apprentice and one of many women who came forward during the campaign to accuse Trump of harassment or assault, initiated the subpoena as part of her lawsuit against the president for defamation. At least 16 women have publicly accused Trump of forcibly attempting to kiss, grope, and have sex with them. Which, you know, look, we're not, you know, lawyers, we're not litigating this case, but Trump himself back in 2005 on tape said that he grabs women by the pussy and he likes to move in on them like a bitch. Okay, those are his words.
Anyway. In fact, around the soundboard.
Right.
I moved on her like a bitch. I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. Grab him by the pussy.
Okay. And he said, when you're a star, they let you do it. Now the reality is, they don't let you do it. You said that you did it without asking for permission. You just sexually assaulted them, and they were stunned and didn't know what to do. Now they know what to do. They're going to try to take you to court because that's where you belong.
Yeah, and the accusations against Trump are eerily similar to the accusations against Harvey Weinstein. And you know, it's again this entitlement, this you know thought that hey, I'm in a position of power, I can go ahead and do this without any ramifications. And to be honest, while Harvey Weinstein has suffered consequences and should suffer consequences, Trump was elected president, and the very same people who point to Harvey Weinstein and say, look at these liberals, look at these dirty men, of course they would do this, it's this indulgent lifestyle, this and that. Those are the same people who A, voted for Trump and refused to criticize him for the same allegations that were made against him.
Yeah, and so here, let me read you the next graphic. Zervos' subpoena aims to prove how Trump deliberately tried to discredit her and other accusers. To me, that's always the worst part. And so Bill Clinton's Monica Lewinsky situation was consensual, but the part that was really terrible was the way that he attacked her in the press afterwards. Insinuating that she was crazy and that she was making it up to get famous, and that's really dirty. And Weinstein did that over and over again, and he would leak into the papers, especially in New York, allegations against people that refuses advances. Okay.
Yep.
And Donald Trump, same thing. He would leak, usually the New York Post, run by Rupert Murdoch. Both Weinstein and Trump, it was their way of airing their trash, because Rupert Murdoch deals in trash, and he's actually loses money on the New York Post every year, but he does it for propaganda reasons so he can help his scummy friends smear women that they have sexually harassed, among other things that Murdoch helps them do. So they would both go to the New York Post and trash anyone who refused their advances or accused them publicly of things that they did actually do.
Right, and also, something just occurred to me that I think is revealing. Donald Trump has a history of suing anyone and everyone, right? He loves to sue people. Why didn't he sue these women for making false allegations against him?
In fact, he threatened to do that and didn't follow through. because the last thing he wants to do is go to court on this issue where they could prove their charges. And in this case, Zarbos is asking for documentation on 10 out of the 16 women. She believes that that exists, that the campaign did have information about what Donald Trump did and how they were gonna cover up for it. Now, if that's true and they could find the paper trail for it, that would be very interesting. And I assume that every Republican, as they ask the Democrats who got money from Weinstein, will then forcefully reject Donald Trump, return the money that they raised from Donald Trump, mm-hmm. call him a monster, and make sure that he gets the help that should get, because he is sick and depraved, as they have called Weinstein for the same actions.
Yeah.
Let's just be clear on that.
Yeah, but of course they won't. And that's why, you know, we showed Margaret Hoover, who's a commentator on CNN, a conservative commentator. That's why I had so much respect for her, for being willing to say what other conservatives refuse to say. She talked about the fact that those on the left treat these instances of sexual assault very differently than those on the right. Those on the right will cover for their own because, hey, that's part of my tribe, I gotta protect my own. But when it comes to others, they have no problem condemning them and saying whatever needs to be said. It shouldn't matter what someone's political ideology is. It shouldn't matter where they're coming from or what they think. The only thing that should matter is whether or not they, you know, engaged in that type of behavior, whether or not they preyed on, you know, the powerless, and whether or not they abused their power. And that's exactly what happened with Weinstein and with Trump. And they should face consequences for it.
Okay, so we're out of time here, guys. We did have a couple stories we didn't get to. We're gonna give you more show during the postgame for the members. So that's tytnetwork.com/join. But we're also at 8:30 p.m. Eastern for the members going to have a live interview with Beto O'Rourke, who is a congressman from Texas, and he's going to take on Ted Cruz for the Senate seat. Oh, I love that. And he doesn't take any corporate PAC money. So he's gonna be in studio here, and members get to watch it live. Everybody else will get to see it in about 24 hours after that. So join right now, tytnetwork.com/join, so you can see that interview and the post game. And don't forget, if you're in Vegas on Wednesday, go to Bally's at 12:30 because the DNC Unity Reform Commission is meeting. Let's get some real reform in the Democratic Party. All right, bye-bye.